This is Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hit! Browns are going to win!
Mayfield, Enzone, Landry, touchdown!
With Dan Kadar and Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. With Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository.
It's intercepted! Picked off by Denzel Ward!
Chubb will take this all the way! 92 yards!
Ready, Browns fans. Now, Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Cover 2. This is Dan Kadar, joined as always by Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich. Nate, how are you this fine fall week?
Good, Dan. How's it going?
Very good. We're here to talk about the Browns and where they're at traditionally. This would be like the quarter point of the season, you know, through four games. And we might give like a progress report on the quarter point, but maybe we'll save that for next week since there are 17 games this year. And the Browns have a legitimate opponent coming up in the form of the Los Angeles Chargers in week five. That game is in Los Angeles. And we'll have full coverage of it over at beaconjournal.com/sports/Browns. It's going to be really one of the NFL games of the week to watch. So we're going to have a lot of coverage of that leading up to it, as we do for every game. But before we get to what we're going to talk about today, I do have to say that today's podcast is brought to you by USA Today Sports Plus. Let me tell you about the new sports app that we've launched as part of the USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores. Today, USA Sports Plus, fan harder. So, Nate, before we talk about the Chargers game, let's talk about kind of the general state of the Browns. And it is a team that has looked incredible on defense the last 2 weeks after there were some questions coming into the season how all of this new talent would gel. They've showed it the last 2 weeks. The offense, however, which everybody kind of expected to be one of the most potent in the NFL, particularly the passing game, has faltered a little bit. So which of these is more true? The Browns offense is concerning, or the Browns defense is really just turned around and one of the better defensive groups in the NFL? Which of those statements is more true in your mind?
I think the defensive statement is more true. There's definitely truth to the offensive statement as well. But here's the thing with the defense, Dan. Like, we talked about Davis Mills not lighting the Browns up or anything, but leading a touchdown drive against them in week two. And, you know, that wasn't ideal. Made the game tight in the fourth quarter before the Browns beat the Texans 31-21. But for a rookie to step in there and do that against the talent on this defense, certainly didn't meet expectations. And, you know, there's criticism of Joe Woods and the scheme, and, you know, was the personnel as good as we thought it was? There was those kinds of questions. And, you know, I think you and I basically got on there and say, yeah, you can panic a little bit if you want. You can be concerned because, yeah, they shouldn't be giving up that kind of drive to Davis Mills in his first real NFL action. On the other hand, hey, we knew this was going to take time for them to gel. Well, boy, they hit warp speed after that bump in the road, didn't they? I mean, I think that what was really crucial is Myles Garrett. He told the group of beat writers the first day of training camp when he was standing under a little tent and at the podium and doing his first interview July 28th when camp opened. And I asked him about being a leader and if it's more important for him than it ever has been in his career to really step up in that respect. And he said, absolutely. And the reason why is because there's so many new faces. You know, we knew he and Denzel Ward were really going to be the only starters returning from week one of 2020 to week one of 2021. And as talented as he is, he knew he had to kind of step up, not just as a leader by example, but vocally a little bit. He's gotten better each year as he's progressed, but now in his fifth NFL season, he knew he had to take more on his shoulders, and he has. And after that Texans game, he really put it on himself and his teammates to step up. He and Malcolm Smith, you know, Malcolm Smith's a veteran, like a longtime NFL player, former Super Bowl MVP, who's taken a larger role with, well, Anthony Walker Jr. has been on injured reserve with a hamstring injury. Miles and Malcolm Smith called, you know, players only meeting on Thursday before the game against the Bears, and they went over film. It was about a half hour session, made their own corrections, no coaches involved, just the players to hash things out. And they had their best practice the same day, best practice of the year. Stefanski said it. Miles Garrett said it. Other guys said it. That was on Thursday as well. They go out a few days later, and they had this great performance, historic defensive effort against the Bears, the 9 sacks. Miles hits a franchise record with 4.5 sacks. What, 1 net passing yard, I think 47 net pass net yards for the Bears, you know, franchise records for the defense of the Browns. But Matt Nagy had a horrible game plan. Justin Fields is a rookie. Hangs on to the ball way too long. So how much of that was fool's gold, you know? I mean, that was the question. And I think the Browns answered by going into U.S. Bank Stadium against a Vikings team that's only 1-3 but had some very tight games. And heading in, the offense was ranked 3rd in the NFL. They have 2 Pro Bowl wide receivers in Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. Kirk Cousins was red hot entering the game. 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, rating of 118+. Hadn't thrown an interception in a long time, and, you know, a couple hundred attempts, and gets rid of the ball very quickly. So you figured, well, it's going to be very hard for the Browns to affect a quarterback the way they did against Fields. Well, they only sacked Cousins twice, but I think PFF had him for 30 pressures. They're credited in the box score 10 quarterback hits. They were in his face all day, and they held the Vikings to 7 points. That offense had coming in for through 3 games been averaging 29 points a game. So I think the Browns answered the question that the defensive turnaround that we saw against the Bears was not fluky. Like, this is a real talented defense, and we knew that on paper, but it's translating now. Joe Woods is dialing it up a little bit more with some pressures. We see, you know, Denzel Ward getting there on a corner blitz, splitting a sack with Miles Garrett, John Johnson the third in Cousins' face on a blitz on a third down stop. Like, we've seen, you know, less sitting back. You know, that's what they did in week one against the Chiefs. You know, I understand strategy is going to be different for every team. You're going against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. You're going to view it differently, but ultra aggressive has paid off in the past couple weeks. We've seen the talent translate. Miles Garrett has stepped it up tremendously, led the Browns in quarterback hits the last 2 weeks and pressures. Jadeveon Clowney has shown up, and they look like a legitimate, you know, top 5, top 10 defense right now. If just the old school NFL rankings in terms of yardage allowed per game, they are 2nd in the league right now. So I can't say enough good things about how the defense has played the last couple of games, and to do it against an offense that was rolling like the Vikings offense, I think shows that it's not just, you know, some kind of fluky performance that they had against the Bears.
Yeah, they've been impressive. Clowney especially, to me, is kind of the guy who is standing out. Miles Garrett, of course, maybe I'm taking him for granted, but you just kind of expect it. With Clowney, when he came in, I just had questions about, like, is this guy washed up? He didn't have a sack last year. He seems to always be hurt and that kind of stuff. And to me, there are a lot of questions about how reliable Clowney could be. But he has been incredible, both getting pressure on the quarterback, and to me, just as importantly, setting the edge against the run. There were a couple plays against the Vikings where he forced the issue on run plays, and he changed the route of the running back, and there were stops by other players on the Browns that led to no yards or 1 yard on a run. And that, to me, is directly on Clowney and how he's playing right now. So he's been really impressive. And I thought against the Vikings, Nate, those defensive tackles the Browns have, particularly Malcolm McDowell and Malik Jackson, man, they look really good. What are your thoughts on I guess, the interior of that defensive line? Because the outside guys, Garrett and Clowney, they always get all the talk, and justifiably so. They're playing really well. But what do you think of those two guys up the middle? Because to me, that they have been rock solid all year.
Yeah, the Malik's in the middle definitely made a difference, especially against the Vikings, really flashed. And they both got the Cousins on that one that, you know, the Browns and Vikings kind of tried to pounce on. There was an incomplete pass late on the third down. But the players on the field were treating it like it might be a fumble. They were there. They were there bringing Cousins down. So, yeah, I mean, they really have shown up, gotten a lot of good push lately. And, you know, this is part of it. Like, Myles Garrett not only had that – excuse me. I think some of my breakfast was still in my throat. Sorry, Dan. Myles Garrett not only had that players-only meeting that he called with Malcolm Smith, but he also publicly said, hey, you know, when the Texans are double teaming or chipping me, obviously Laremy Tunsil is one of the best left tackles in the game, but when they're also chipping me and other guys on our line aren't making plays, it's frustrating. So he had the private meeting. He told guys they need to step up. He told his teammates he needed to step up. Then he publicly said all this on Friday during his, you know, weekly media session in Berea. And guys just answered the bell, and the Malik's in the middle are a great example of that. Jadeveon Clowney is a great example of that. You know, the D-line has really kind of taken over the last two games. And, you know, let's talk about some other guys. Like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah continues to flash after you called his breakout game. Boom. You deserve a standing ovation, a bouquet of flowers thrown at your feet on stage. For Troy Hill, you called the Troy Hill game. He did a really good job against K.J. Osborne, the number three receiver of the Vikings, who I think is a pretty good player. And, you know, I thought Troy Hill had a really nice game in Minnesota. And, hey, part of this, you know, impressive defensive performance lies in the fact that heading in, they didn't, you know, their best corner had been Greg Newsome, the second rookie first-round pick. They didn't have him. Calf injury, ruled out. Greedy Williams makes his first start since 2019, lost year in 2020 with the nerve damage in his shoulder. Comes in and plays great. He played great. He had, you know, the game's only takeaway there with about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Interception off Kirk Cousins again, who hadn't thrown a pick this season. Denzel Ward. I mean, we had talked last week about, well, is there some concern with Denzel Ward? Gotten off to a less than ideal start to this season. He showed up. I mean, obviously there was a touchdown in some kind of zone that he was the closest guy to Justin Jefferson on that game opening drive. But the rest of the game, Denzel Ward made a bunch of plays. Key breakup late in the fourth corner on a deep route along the right sideline. So I think Denzel Ward had a nice kind of turnaround game here from, you know, earlier in what he had been doing earlier in the season. So, I mean, Kevin Stefanski said after the game, this was like the perfect example of the rush and coverage complementing each other because you got all the pressure. You got in Cousins' face. You got the quarterback hits. And then you had defensive backs who we're talking about. You had these corners breaking up passes. Grant Delpit had a broken up pass. You know, they really, I think, played well. And also, you know, Ronnie Harrison Jr. I mean, Ronnie Harrison Jr., how big a deal was made when Ronnie Harrison Jr. got ejected after just five snaps in week one? It was a big deal. MJ Stewart had to come in. Yeah. And, you know, everybody said, well, how did that affect the defense? Could they have beaten the Chiefs, you know, would that have, you know, affected the outcome with such a big curveball there on defense to start the season? Well, he only played two snaps in this one. evaluated for a concussion. Browns initially on Sunday said he had a concussion. Stefanski came out on Monday and said that actually he had been cleared. Doctors determined Monday morning he did not have a concussion, so that's good news. He should be good to go against the Chargers on Sunday. Nevertheless, that's a big deal. Only two snaps for your starting strong safety. Well, Grant Delpit, who had been playing that limited snap count coming off the torn Achilles and the hamstring injury from training camp, he played all but two snaps. I think 65 to 67 snaps, played well, and they didn't miss a beat. I mean, this was the first time since 1995 that the Browns held an opponent to single-digit points in back-to-back games. So I think that we have to say the defense is playing like a legit top defense, whatever you want to say, top five, top 10. Again, they're right now they're ranked second in yards per game allowed. And we got to, give credit where credit is due and say that that is the truer statement right now. And in my opinion, it's kind of overwhelming when you look at the evidence, you look at what they're doing, especially, without Newsom. Again, without Anthony Walker Jr., your starting middle linebacker and your primary signal caller, he's missed three games now. Eligible to be designated for return this week. Stefanski said Monday he doesn't know if that'll happen yet, so we'll see. If he comes back from IR and the hamstring injury, if not, Malcolm Smith has stepped up and been playing well.
Yeah, he has. And I thought he had a couple miscues, particularly against the Chiefs, but he has kind of turned it around, as you would expect a veteran to, quite honestly, to do. Real quick, apologies to Malik McDowell for calling him Malcolm McDowell, which, of course, is the actor. I watched the 2007 Halloween remake earlier this week because it's October, and that's a thing I like to do in October, is watch creepy movies before I go to bed for some reason. So apologies to Malik McDowell. But anyway, Nate, I do want to get your thoughts. I do want to get your thoughts on the offense. Particularly Baker Mayfield. I mean, it cannot be ignored, the fact that he missed some really, I think, wide open throws against the Vikings on Sunday. And I don't think it's a symptom of the thing we saw in the first eight games of last year with Odell Beckham, where he's trying to force Odell Beckham the ball. I don't think that's the case, but if you think so, tell me otherwise. But what's your take on Baker Mayfield at this point of the year? Because there has been some good signs. There was the left shoulder injury, which hasn't held him out at all. And now he's kind of, I think, faltering a little bit to some degree. Are you thinking this is a speed bump? Do you think it's no big deal? Something to just keep monitoring? Where are you at on Baker Mayfield right now in the most important season of his career?
Well, I would say that I am more worried about left tackle than Baker Mayfield by far. Like, was that an awful game by Baker Mayfield? Yes. Is there some reason for concern? Yes. But we've seen some of the greatest quarterbacks have bad games. Aaron Rodgers had a horrible week one. I mean, he's looked like the MVP caliber Aaron Rodgers we're used to seeing since then. And Baker Mayfield's not one of the great quarterbacks. He's not MVP caliber quarterback. And he has had bad games and needed to bounce back before, and he's done it. So I think he's going to be fine. I do wonder about the left shoulder injury and its potential impact on what we're seeing. And this is the reason why. He came out in week one against Kansas City, and he was pinpoint accurate. Yes, I know he had the interception at the end while being tripped up by Browns killer Dan Sorensen. We know that. But he was red hot in that game. And obviously, I think he was, very accurate against the Texans. Now, I know after that shoulder popped out and popped back in the second quarter, Kevin Stefanski kept that to a short passing attack and leaned on the run, didn't want to get Baker hit. But he was 19-21 in that game. So, let's not forget, through the first two games, he led the NFL in completion percentage, 81, mm-hmm. I want to say maybe 81.5%, something like that.
Yeah, right.
No longer the case. Obviously, he had a horrible day, as we said. 15 of 33, missed open guys, missed an open Odell a couple times, and obviously in the fourth quarter, Odell had separation, was open. You hit him in stride there to touchdown to put an exclamation point on Kevin Stefanski's homecoming victory. But instead, you got to get the ball back with like a little over a minute left and have a last defensive stand to win it. And they did. But yeah, it could have put them away. And you know, they, you know, the ball wasn't where it needed to be. Underthrown and behind Beckham. So there's concern there. And I would say that left shoulder injury, to get back to my point about how it could be a potential cause of some of the accuracy issues we're seeing. He did start off the season so accurate and hasn't been since. And I wonder if it's a case of, you know, he has some kind of harness on. Now you can see in photos that there's some kind of, you know, black sleeves under his jersey that would probably be under his shoulder pads. And you can see more of whatever that is on his left arm. You can see a little bit of it on the right, but you can see more on the left. So it's that left, obviously he doesn't throw with his left arm, but that left non-throwing shoulder, if that's in some kind of harness, some kind of brace, whatever the term is, whatever it might be. And I don't even know for sure it is that, but you can see something in the photos. Google image, Baker Mayfield Vikings, and look, there's something he's wearing, okay? If it's more than just an undershirt, if it is a brace or a harness or whatever, I wonder if there is some restrictive, you know, property to that that might be thrown off his mechanics just a little bit if his body's in certain positions or if he's on the move or whatever the case may be. I wonder. Now, he's not going to use it as an excuse. You know, myself and another reporter asked him about the shoulder after the game. He said it's still attached. I said, does that have anything to do? This seems like uncharacteristic accuracy. We've seen him with accuracy issues sometimes. They have popped up, but he's been able to get it corrected, get the mechanics right, get the feet right, and be accurate for the most part. And like I said, the way he started the season was very accurate. So it just seemed like this came out of nowhere, and it seemed like it happened after, you know, we heard and saw the shoulder pop out and pop back in. So you got to wonder if there's something related. And, you know, he's wearing whatever that is he's wearing. I don't know if it could make a difference, but I think it's at least something worth considering here just because of how it has gone from a very accurate quarterback to one who's missing guys like that. You know, so I do wonder that, Dan. And I also wonder, like, you know, with Odell back, is he looking for him a little bit too much instead of going through his progressions? I don't think there's signs that he's forcing it to him. Like I did feel like he did at times last season before Odell got hurt. But the one play that stands out in my mind is there was a third down and Baker's like moving to his right. And Demetric Felton standing right by the sideline, right by the first down marker, wide open for an easy first down, and Baker's looking at Odell at the, you know, deeper down the field, coming in kind of over the middle. And I think that while he's looking there for Odell, his eyes don't move to Felton quick enough in the progression. So, you know, I'm not blaming, you know, Odell for that. Certainly not. It's not like, you know, there's a sign like he's demanding the ball or anything like that. I don't want people to misinterpret it. But I just wonder if Baker didn't move through his progressions quick enough because, you know, that was an enticing, route. And obviously he's 13 and he doesn't get the easy first down. And he ends up taking a sack on that play when a guy was wide open pretty much, you know, right in front of him on a layup throw that, you know, pretty much anybody could make, even people who have no shot of ever sniffing the NFL. So that was an interesting play to me that made me wonder if he was looking at Odell a little too long there in that instance. But for the most part, like I don't think this is, hey, Odell came back and it messed Baker up. I think it's probably, if I had to pick a theory, maybe I'm going to go with the idea that, maybe it's a combination of some of the things we're talking about, and maybe there is some kind of, brace or something like that. But again, it's hard to know because he doesn't want opponents to know about it. Stefanski said Monday he doesn't think that the shoulder is affecting him based on what he's seen in practice. And, if it was and if they believed it was, I don't think that the Browns would say it because they don't want opponents to think that it's a big deal. Because then, are guys going to be zeroed in on that? Or, it's also odd that if it were a concern that, Baker's running around. By the way, on a designed run in Minnesota, too. So, why would you be calling that? So, I don't know. It's kind of hard to figure that out. And then sometimes, Dan, after saying all this and probably talking for way too long, sometimes you just have an off day. I mean, sometimes you just have an off day. So maybe he was just, way off, and, that there's really not an easy explanation for it other than sometimes it just happens in sports, even to the greats.
It really does. And like you said, Aaron Rodgers had one himself, and it does happen. Look, if anybody who's listened to this podcast long enough knows, I have plenty of off days myself. So, and part of it, the Beckham thing, the play you described with Felton describes it pretty well. But it's also sometimes just like, it's human nature, if somebody said, hey, do you want to drive a Ferrari or this Mustang? I'm going to pick the Ferrari, and in this poor analogy, Dimitri Felton is the Mustang and Odell Beckham is the Ferrari. It's the guy's just back for the first time, really second game back. He's so good. And sometimes it's just human nature sometimes, but we'll see. We'll keep monitoring, kind of the play of Baker Mayfield, and if this left shoulder thing pops up. And I'll put a photo with the podcast on the site that goes up with the podcast of where you can see kind of exactly what Nate is describing, coming out of the jersey a little bit, where it's like a, it looks like a brace. So that'll be up at beaconjournal.com/sports/Browns, of course. But you mentioned left tackle being the bigger issue, and it's concerning. Now, just for full disclosure, we're recording this just around 2 p.m. on Tuesday. So there's no official word on Jedrick Wills, but he's had this ankle injury now for a little while. Nate, do you think the Browns are at a spot where they just need to sit this guy and let him heal up, or should they keep pushing him to play through it, despite the fact that he's come out of the last two games for a period or longer against the Vikings? What should the Browns do with Jedrick Wills?
Yeah, I don't think he has not played a full game yet. So, yeah. He's come out of every – he's not, finished with 100% of snaps in a game. And, it was Blake Hance relieving him, and then it was James Hudson III, the fourth-round rookie, in Minnesota who came in. And it just seems like it's not just the original ankle injury that he suffered in Kansas City in week one, but he keeps getting rolled up on. And I think he keeps getting rolled up on partly because of bad luck, but more likely because he can't move as well. So he's in bad spots, bad situations, can't get out of the way, whatever it may be. I think that, it's just to the point now where if you can get Chris Hubbard back, and I think he probably can, I think you probably should see if he can make that work for a week, because – you know, I understand you want your offensive lineman to play through injury because it's a position where so many guys do. And not fair to Jedrick Quills, but the shadow of Joe Thomas exists. And you go into First Energy Stadium and literally the snap count streak is up there in the Ring of Honor, 10,363. So if you don't believe the shadow exists, just go look at that. And the reason why it's relevant today, after, you know, 4 years or whatever after Joe Thomas retired, Joe Thomas has really good friends who are some of the best players on the Browns roster, and Joel Bitonio, left guard, and J.C. Trenard, center. And those guys play through all kinds of stuff, especially J.C., the high ankle sprain, played through like a couple years ago. Missed all of 2020 training camp with a knee injury, had the surgery, came back, didn't miss a snap. He's playing through knee injuries, knee issues still to this day. He's always limited in practice and questionable, and he plays and doesn't miss a snap. We go out there. One of the few things we get to see nowadays during the regular season is a team stretch for like 20 minutes, and then they go through individual drills for like another 10 or so. You know, we see about 20 to 30 minutes of practice. Well, in stretching, Dan, almost every player's on the ground going through all the stretching, whatever, you know, all different positions, you know, stretching all, you know, the legs and everything. Yeah, everything you can imagine, all the stretching that Bob Wiley despises. You know what's going on at that time? J.C. Treaders is standing there. He's standing among his teammates straight up, just looking at the clouds or the grass or whatever. He's standing there. And my interpretation is that he can't get on the ground and do all these stretches because his knee's so messed up that he just has to stand there. He literally just stands there while everyone else stretches. That tells you something's majorly wrong, and he is playing through it. So you want your offensive lineman to play through injury, and Jedrick Wills has done the best he has been able to do with it. But it just, this injury continues to be exacerbated by other things happening on the field. He cannot move like he normally does. I zeroed in on him on a rewatch last night. I thought that there were times he looked pretty good. You know, but you can tell he's just not his normal self. I think they definitely believe as a coaching staff that even like 50% or whatever, 50, 60% Jedrick Wills is better than Blake Hance or James Hudson III for a full game. But I have a hard time believing that they think that 50% Jedrick Wills is better than Chris Hubbard, their valuable sixth man. Who, of course, in an ideal world would not be your starting left tackle, but we're not in an ideal world. We're in a world in which Jedrick Wills has come out of every game. So Chris Hubbard had the triceps injury that he suffered in Kansas City. He's missed the past few games and has a big brace on that arm. It's a big arm length brace. But he practiced all last week, which is great news. They ruled him out after he went through a full week of practice. But usually when they practice a guy for a full week and then they rule him out, that means they're going to ramp him up more the next week with the idea of playing him. I think that that might be the route they want to go. Jedrick Wills was to kind of gauge the severity of it. We don't know. Like we said, you preface this with when we were recording and everything, and the lack of an update puts us in kind of a guessing game territory, but we do know that he was carted from the sideline to the locker room, so he didn't like walk around on that ankle, which makes you think that it got banged up pretty badly again. So I'm not a doctor, as we all know, or I wouldn't be on this podcast talking football every week with you, Dan. Athletic trainers and the medical professionals, I can't you know, get into their heads and their decision making, and they know what they need to know to make the decision with Jedrick and the coaching staff. But on the outside looking in, I think it would make sense to give Chris Hubbard the nod if he can do it and try to get Jedrick back to closer to, you know, 80, you know, whatever. I don't know if he can get the 90%, but if he can get the 70, 80 and make it through a game, that'd be a hell of a lot better than what we've been seeing.
Yeah, it's been problematic. And I know he's a rookie, but man, James Hudson looked pretty rough, if you ask me. I know it's extremely difficult to ask that of a rookie backup to come in and play left tackle in the NFL, but boy, he has a ways to go, I think. And man, your J.C. Treader stretching, not being able to get up off the ground, I've never related to an NFL player more in my life.
Joe Thomas has all kinds of stories about that, how his back was so messed up one year that he was like a turtle. He literally couldn't get off the ground. He would have off his back, like he couldn't sit up. He would have to roll over on his stomach and do a push-up to get up. So I haven't specifically talked to JC about it, but I'm just telling you from observing, he's not on the ground stretching with the other guys, and I can only surmise from that, with him being listed on the injury report as limited with a knee every day of every week in the regular season, that those two things are related.
Yeah, for sure. So moving on from where we're at with the Browns right now to Sunday's game against the Chargers. Again, it's in Los Angeles. It's at 4:25, brand new stadium, beautiful stadium. Really good team, Nate. I don't know if you watch Monday Night Football, but they played the Raiders and looked really good at stretches. And they're one of the best teams in the NFL, if you ask me. And they have the best young quarterback in the NFL in Justin Herbert, who's in his second year out of Oregon. He's really good. He's big, physical, fast, athletic, big arm, everything you want in a quarterback, basically. Chargers defense is really good. Everybody knows they have Joey Bosa, but they have a lot more beyond him too. So Nate, when we kind of did the schedule game on this one was really kind of this one was hard to predict, at least for me. Where are you at going into this game for the Browns?
This is going to be a tough one. A lot of people are going to pick the Chargers to win. I think looking at it, heading into this past weekend, I thought, wow, the Browns really need to win one of the next two. Lucky for them, defense played lights out, and the running game dominated. Chase McLaughlin looked like the real deal again, and all that compensated for a poor quarterback performance from Baker Mayfield, and they beat the Vikings. So, I don't want to say they're playing with house money, because you want to win every game, and I mean, look at the NFL. There's only one undefeated team right now, and that's the Arizona Cardinals, who the Browns have to face after the Chargers. So Yes. You can't take a week off. You can't say, well, we won in Minnesota, we don't need this one. They absolutely need it. I'm just saying that, their backs aren't against the wall at this point at 3-1, which is a good feeling, because this is going to be a really tough one. Having said all that, I'm going to pick the Browns. And I did watch Monday Night Football. And when I was doing the schedule game in the spring or whatever, it did not occur to me that the Chargers would be coming off a Monday night game, but that's tough. They're a little bit shorter of a turnaround. And another thing that I didn't consider and I learned last night, I think the Browns have a great chance with the way their fans travel to kind of have a quasi home game. Like, it won't be rocking in their favor like First Energy Stadium would. But I think that they can have the majority of fans in that stadium. And I know the Raiders did. I'm telling you, the Browns fans travel great. And I know this from a dozen years on the beat. They're in every flight I'm on. They're in every restaurant, every hotel. There's people walking around in Browns gear. Every street of every downtown NFL city when the Browns are in town. And most of this is through really bad years. As we all know, the Browns have been bad for a long, long time and haven't been good until this year and last. And so there's even more reason for people to spend money, travel, go see the Browns. And flights are harder to get than ever, partly because of the pandemic, but partly because Browns fans are buying all the plane tickets. And I know from traveling what it's like. I think that they're going to have a great presence there on the road, and I think they're going to win a tight one. Right now, I've got it like 27-24 Browns.
That is bold. I got to tell you that. I think the Browns are coming out of the easiest part of their schedule for sure. And now is when, you know, the challenging parts are going to get cranked up, because you have the Chargers, like you said, you have the Cardinals the week after that. And they're the NFL's only undefeated team at 4-0. Of course, that could change by the time we get there. And then you have the Thursday night game against the Broncos. So and the Broncos defense is really, really good too. So it's a very tough stretch right now. And if the Browns want to kind of prove who everybody thinks they are, they have to win two out of these three games, I think. So with that said, I'm going to say, boy, this one's just a toss-up for me, quite frankly, against the Chargers. I'm going to go with the Chargers, I think, just because Herbert's really good. I really like their left tackle, who they took in the draft this year, Rashawn Slater. Derwin James is a really good player when he's healthy, which he is right now. Joey Bosa can change games just as easily or more so than Myles Garrett can. Their receivers are really good too. So to me, and Austin Eckler, who I didn't even mention, their running back, he can do everything. I think you're going to see a JOK game number two. That's what I'm going to call it. Cause he's going to have his hands full, you know, kind of trying to cover Eckler a lot coming out of the backfield. He's an incredible receiving running back. So I'm unfortunately going to go with the Chargers, probably 31-28, something like that. Fairly high scoring, although I thought the Vikings game would be high scoring, and look where that ended up. So what do I know? But I'm going to go Chargers, and we'll see what happens after that against the Cardinals and the Broncos. But, Nate, do you have anything else for the podcast this week?
Well, I just wanted to kind of piggyback off some of what you just said, and yeah, I agree. They've got a lot of good players. They're a good team. Battles of, 2-3-1 teams. You know, Herbert's really good. And I agree with everything you said. I mean, this is a really tough test. I just think there are a couple factors that help the Browns. It's that, what I said about the fans and what that stadium composition can look like. And, a little bit of a totally behind the eight ball situation, but a little bit of a disadvantage playing on Monday night, the turnaround there. If it's really an even game, I consider those factors, worth considering. And I just think that this Browns defense is rolling. And I want to say too, Dan, that the Browns defense has been rolling since you've picked some breakout players for them. I think with the JOK game against the Bears, Troy Hill. Now, I know you said JOK game part two. Do you have anybody else? Because frankly, you are on just as much of a roll as the Browns D right now. So I want to give you a shot to keep it going.
Well, I'm going to stick with it being a JOK number two game. And Grant Delpit, I think, is worth mentioning. And you're writing about him for this week. I think he's going to have to factor in. We don't know about Ronnie Harrison Jr. at this point. Again, we're recording Tuesday afternoon. So if he's out, you know, it's a huge Delpit game. But I am going to stick with being another JOK spotlight game, just because he matches up with what the Chargers like to do on offense with their personnel. I think this is going to be a really fun game. It's to me one of the games of the year. I mean, the Chargers could beat the Chiefs. The Browns couldn't. You can boil it down to as easy as that if you wanted to. But I think this is going to be a really fun game.
Yeah. No, that's, you can go common opponent, sure, and that is something to consider. But here's a couple things I want to say. One, I'll probably pick the Cardinals to beat the Browns. I just don't think they come out of this stretch unscathed. you know. But if I have to go either or, you know, it's hard for me to pick. It's hard for me to sit here. And, yeah, I get to look ahead. The Browns coaches and players don't get to look ahead. I get to look ahead. It's one of my favorite lines. I get to look ahead. They've never lost back-to-back games under Kevin Stefanski. So if I have in my mind they're going to lose to the Cardinals, it's hard for me to pick the Chargers to beat them right now. So that's part of my thinking too. Also, as bad as Baker Mayfield was, he did not turn it over. And so also he does deserve credit for that. And he had turned it over the first couple of games. He's been clean since then. So, you know, this is a team with a really nice rookie cornerback as well. And Asante Samuel Jr. playing very good so far. You mentioned Derwin James. Bosa had a strip sack last night. The Raiders recovered and punted, but we know what a nightmare he can be. He's right up there with Myles Garrett, among the best edge rushers in the league. Normally lines up at left defensive end, but you know the greats can move around. But primarily a Jack Conklin matchup. They need their all-pro right tackle to play like an all-pro. So those are some of the things I'm thinking. But, Ronnie Harrison Jr. should play because he didn't have a concussion, and he's cleared from concussion protocol Monday morning. Should be good to go unless there's some kind of setback.
Yeah.
He could. But, Dan, I mean, I'm glad you said it because I have seen situations where guys come in later and then all of a sudden they're feeling weird on a Wednesday and then they go back into the protocol. You never know. But I'm glad you mentioned Delpit because I think he's ascending. Obviously has been playing well, and then handled the full workload in Minnesota. So, yeah, I'm very excited about it. I was torn about this game, but, you know, after watching last night and being very impressed by the Chargers, I just couldn't get it out of my head thinking that how, you know, I think if you were doing a Chargers podcast, they're looking at a really good Browns team coming in, and Baker Mayfield, who and I had an off day. And generally, when he has an off day like he had, and that was a way off day, he bounces back pretty well because, you know, he gets that fire lit under him. And there's going to be all the talking heads this week talking about how Baker Mayfield isn't a real franchise quarterback, doesn't deserve the kind of money that the Browns would have to pay him and a contract extension to be their guy of the future. You're going to hear all the Baker Mayfield hate come out and be at the forefront again. And sometimes I think that Baker's at his best when all that stuff is being put on blast. I think he's going to have a nice bounce back game. This is the guy in Justin Herbert who just broke Baker's rookie touchdown pass record for a single season last year. I think he's going to want to have a really good showing in this duel. And I think that there are some motivational, emotional factors going for the Browns starting quarterback. If he can manage the physical, whatever that is, whether it's just an off day, the eyes not moving and the progressions quickly enough, which is mental and physical, obviously, or some kind of shoulder brace harness situation. If he can somehow, you know, manage that and take a step to get over one of those hurdles or multiple, if they're a combination of things going on, I think there are some motivational factors he can tap into. So, yeah, I mean, all this is swirling around right now. I think it makes it a fascinating game, a game that we all had circled in the schedule game. And I think it should be a fun one.
It really should be. It's a measuring stick game, if nothing else, for the Cleveland Browns and for Baker Mayfield specifically, like you just described. That was very well stated. So that is going to do it for the podcast this week. Again, you can find all of our coverage leading up to and of the game over at beaconjournal.com/sports/Browns. But that is going to do it for Cover 2 this week. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you next time.